Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Politics is easy, you know. All you have to do is figure out the money. House Republicans took their turn at that today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Tuesday, the 20th of March. Good as always to have you here. And you can say this about the election we're going to have this fall and the campaigning we're living through right now on primary day in Illinois. It's not hard to tell where people stand about Washington and spending taxpayer money. Small government, big government, cut spending, don't cut spending, you know the rest. House Republicans laid their budgetary cards on the table today. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
The budget plan is the brainchild of Republican House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan. He says President Obama isn't taking the deficit seriously enough.
The president's increasingly on the outside of these emerging consensus looking in.
The Ryan plan slashes the number of income tax brackets down to two. It cuts corporate taxes, and it includes a scaled-down version of the Medicare reform plan Ryan proposed last year. Seniors didn't like that plan, and Democrats capitalized on the controversy, scoring a surprise win in a special House election.
If this wasn't a radio interview, you would probably see a big smile on my face right now.
That's Democratic activist Eddie Vail. He's with Protect Your Care, a group that promotes the president's health care law. He says the Ryan plan is a gift to Democrats because the GOP will alienate seniors again. But Republican strategist Ron Bongean says the party's congressional candidates just have to emphasize that the plan would only affect future Medicare recipients, giving them a choice of private insurance plans or traditional Medicare. Bongean says the GOP has to make the case for reform quickly.
They have to define this issue before the Democrats define it for them.
J.D. Foster of the Conservative Heritage Foundation says when GOP lawmakers do that in their campaigns, they'll realize
it gives them something very concrete to run on, and that's precisely what they needed.
The Republican presidential candidates didn't exactly rally around the Ryan plan today, but Foster says they will once they've had a chance to study it. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
No matter their party, candidates who are going to be on the ballot this fall, from the top all the way down to the smallest congressional districts, have at least one thing in common. They want the support, they need the votes, of blue-collar workers, middle-income, working Americans, people still facing very real economic challenges.
The American dream is shaking right now.
Top 1%.
I think we're very blessed to have what we have.
The 99%.
I've never been one to look for a handout.
Rockford, Illinois, about an hour northwest of Chicago, is an old factory town where a lot of the factories have closed and where a lot of the debate is about what the government can or should do to revitalize the real economy. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Jan Soltis lives with her two daughters just up the road from the Chrysler plant. Across the street, the railroad tracks that help supply the plant. The house used to be a country vet's office. It's got a little porch and a white picket fence, and now I'm going to go on in.
Would you like a beverage, a Coke or a ginger ale or anything?
It's 4 in the afternoon, and Soltis, who's a single mom, just got off her shift at the Chrysler plant in time to meet her daughters coming home from high school. There's one more generation in the picture.
We live with my mom.
Is she here?
No, she's at work. She's 72 and has to work full time.
As a receptionist at the local hospital. Soltis has a BA and a master's degree and was making over $60,000 working in HR before she got laid off a year ago. This is Katie, her 16-year-old daughter.
It's been very nerve-wracking because since she lost her job, I was afraid, you know, she wouldn't get another one or she would have to go back into retail and, you know, get a job that wasn't fit for her education and such. I did not ask her to buy me anything. I was very tight with money and stuff.
Soltis couldn't make it on $300 a week in unemployment and filed for bankruptcy. Then, last month, she landed a job on the Jeep assembly line.
I'm in metal finishing. I'm not laying on the ground with a tool tightening screws. I'm actually feeling for blemishes on the steel before the cars go and get painted. It's terribly boring.
And not all that lucrative. As a new hire, she's getting $15.78 an hour. That's just over half what Chrysler pays workers with more seniority, who were already on the job when the UAW granted wage concessions. Still, Soltis considers herself lucky. 3 years ago, Chrysler filed for bankruptcy, and the assembly lines went silent. With the government bailout and new investment from Fiat, a couple thousand workers have been brought on at the local plant. But unemployment in the area remains at 12.5%. Soltis is a staunch UAW Democrat.
Good afternoon, North American Tool.
But the further you get from people who make cars and the plants they make them in, the less well the Obama administration's bailout of the auto industry plays. Adam Gentry is a skilled metalworker at North American Tool. It's a non-union plant making custom machine parts in South Beloit, Illinois.
I mean, you've got multi-billion dollar companies getting help, and there's people losing their houses, can't feed their families, so it definitely makes you raise an eyebrow.
Gentry's 34. He briefly attended college and then took a job here in his early 20s. During the recession, his hours were cut and his 401k fell by half. Now he's back to full-time pay.
Obviously, there's things we've wanted for years that we couldn't, you know, come up with the money to get. I'm actually looking at buying a new Harley, so...
Give that man his Harley, or at least enough confidence to part with the down payment, and you might just have his vote. Gentry's a Republican, though so far he doesn't trust any of the candidates to create jobs and cut the deficit, or help him launch his 12-year-old son to do better financially than he has.
I think definitely you got to have a cap on college tuition. That's something that I'm looking at right now, and it just seems like every year it just goes up and up and up and up and up and up.
Back at the Soltis house, Katie says she's definitely going to college. She and her mom both see it as crucial to getting ahead in the world, though paying the bill seems ever more remote.
It's around $26,000 for in-state. I really worry about that. I am very much hoping to get grants and student aid so I don't have to take out loans.
I asked Mom, Jan, if she can help.
I'm still paying on my student loan for my master's, so I hope to be able to help her. But after the bankruptcy and living on $300 a week for so long, no, I don't have a thing put away.
And at this point, making $15.78 an hour at the new Chrysler, she doubts she'll ever make up the ground she lost in the Great Recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street lost some ground today. Not as much as it could have, though. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Even in an economy with 8.3% unemployment, being a job applicant today still isn't easy, especially if you're on Facebook, which pretty much means most people. You've heard about employers and human resources types looking through job applicants' Facebook pages and other social media sites, right? Well, now they're going one better. The Associated Press reported today that some companies have been asking applicants for their Facebook usernames and passwords during job interviews. Manuel Valdez co-wrote the AP story today. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So my first question is, can they do that?
I guess they can. there is no legal groundwork for this. Employers are free to ask for your Facebook password and login, according to legal experts.
Yeah, are we free to say no?
You are, but it depends. You know, if you really want the job, you may be forced to say yes.
Yeah. You know, the last time I talked to HR people as part of an interview process here for new applicants, I wasn't even allowed to ask if they had kids. For crying out loud.
It seems this is more prevalent in public agencies, specifically law enforcement agencies, police officers, correctional facilities, and 911 dispatchers.
It does sort of make sense for public safety agencies, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're looking for character traits that, you know, would not bode well for law enforcement personnel. You know, and they seems to, and people seem to be pretty okay with it if you're applying for a police officer. It's sort of implied that you give up a little bit of your privacy if you want to be a police officer. However, we did see this in some private employers.
What kinds of companies?
Well, we had a person who applied to be a cashier and was asked this over the phone by an HR manager. Unfortunately, this person he was threatened to be fired.
We're piling on Facebook just because that's, you know, it's Facebook and that's what happens when you're the biggest. But what about things like Twitter and other social media sites?
One of our people I talked to was asked for his Twitter. Again, he had a private Twitter account, so he was asked for his Facebook for his password and login information.
And what did he do?
He refused. But luckily for him, he could afford to do it.
What other things might employers ask that, you know, in the world of social media, you wouldn't want to give up? I can think of password. I can think of friending people. What else is out there?
There are also non-disparagement agreements. That is when, after you get hired, you sign a contract saying you will not speak in any negative form about your employer on a social media site.
Can they do that? Wow, I'm asking that question a lot. Can they do that?
I guess they can, but the ACLU is looking into it. We've seen cases in Seattle and other places in the country of employers doing this. I was reached out by a woman who worked at a shoe store and was forced to sign one of these agreements.
So let me ask you this. What happens if the AP comes to you and says, listen, I need your Facebook account information?
I would probably say no.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking me too, although my Facebook site's pretty boring.
Well, you know, my Facebook profile is just basically Instagram pictures of sunsets.
Right. Sunsets? Is that your thing?
Sunsets and puppies.
Manuel Valdez, he's a reporter for the Associated Press. Manuel, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up.
Everything that's financial is very, very formulaic. It's like you can't get more formulaic than financial reporting.
So why not have a computer do it? Wait, what? All right, first, let's do the numbers. News of higher fuel prices in China tanked Wall Street today. The Dow Industrials lost 68 points. That's about 0.5%, finished at 13,170. The NASDAQ dropped 4 points, 0.1%, 3,074. The S&P 500 fell 4 points. 0.3%, settled at 1,405. Concerns, as I said, that higher fuel prices will slow China's economy weighed heavily on U.S. companies that depend on global growth. Alcoa, the world's biggest aluminum maker, slumped 1.5%. Caterpillar slowed by more than 2.5% today. Coal producer Peabody Energy cooled down 5%. There was some sparkle today, though. Tiffany glittered up 0.6%. The jewelry company expected higher sales this year in Asia and the Americas. Speaking of sales, that is movie sales, pre-sales tickets for The Hunger Games have topped more than 1 million. The company behind that movie, Lionsgate, roared up 7% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on 10-year Treasury notes fell to 2.36%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at Marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at Marketplace.org/the Big Book.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. The National Association of Realtors reports on sales of existing homes for February. It's the United Nations International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And how can I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this? Matthew Broderick's birthday. He'll be 50. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. Used to be that if you didn't know what you were going to do when you got out of college, you went to law school. Safe, reliable, pretty much guaranteed employment. Sadly, though, legal services aren't recession-proof. Law firms aren't hiring like they used to for lack of business, which means there are fewer people applying to law school, which is affecting the businesses that prep those would-be Supreme Court justices. Marketplace's Sally Herships has that story.
The law school admission test, the LSAT, is losing popularity. 16% fewer legal hopefuls took the test this academic year than last.
And in raw numbers, fewer people will be taking the LSAT this year than at any time in the past decade.
Eli Mestal went to Harvard Law, and he's editor at legal industry blog, Above the Law.
If the number of people taking the LSAT is declining, that means that the number of people applying to law school must also go down.
Therefore, the number of people preparing for the LSAT will also drop. Roger Israni is director of Testmasters, a test prep company. He says he's not seeing a big drop in enrollments, but instead the company is getting a different kind of student.
In the past, it's been like, well, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I think I'll apply to law school.
But law school is no longer a safe fallback.
those that are a little bit more wishy-washy, like I'm thinking about law school, but I'm also thinking of business school and maybe possibly getting my PhD, it seems that there are fewer of those folks.
Ellie Mistal says while there are fewer high-paying legal jobs, tuition for law school has gone up and up.
That's starting to have an effect on people who realize that maybe taking out $100,000 to go to school for 3 years isn't the smartest idea in terms of their financial security and future.
But Mistal says the drop in students taking the LSAT could also be a positive indicator of more jobs and less need to turn to graduate school. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
If you've ever ordered anything from Amazon.com, odds are your package came from one of the company's enormous warehouses, multiple football fields, enormous, I'm talking here. Amazon employs thousands of people to run through its order fulfillment centers, as they're called, carefully picking and packing up the tens of thousands of different things that it sells. Amazon spent more than $4.5 billion staffing those warehouses last year, and today it took a big step toward getting a handle on its biggest single operating expense by committing to employing robots. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Amazon is buying Kiva Systems, a company that makes warehouse robots, for $775 million. Robots packaging things. Might remind you of that movie a few years back.
Name? Wally.
But these robots aren't nearly as cute or sophisticated. Think of a bright orange machine, something like a forklift, picking up items from shelves and delivering them to workers who box them up. A computer guides the machines through a carefully laid out grid. At BGC Partners, analyst Colin Gillis says this move could be just what Amazon needs to control its labor costs and boost its narrowing profit margins.
As their revenue has continued to grow, their fulfillment costs and their headcount have actually grown faster, and that's resulted in Amazon having razor-thin margins, right? They make about a penny on every dollar of revenue.
Ironically, Amazon has been holding out the promise of more jobs as it's negotiated to build warehouses here in California and elsewhere in exchange for tax considerations. At Evercore Partners, analyst Ken Senna argues this move to bolster automation won't necessarily cost jobs.
I think to the extent that they can expand the centers, or, you know, those centers will come with jobs. But I think for Amazon, they're trying to make more with less and make those centers as smart as they can and as efficient as they can.
Some Amazon-owned companies, including Zappos, have already been using the robots, along with other big retailers, including Crate and Barrel and Staples. Amazon has indicated Kiva will keep doing business with other companies, but some analysts wonder if Amazon might eventually keep the technology to itself to gain a competitive advantage. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
One of the things Congressman Paul Ryan's budget proposes to do to cut government spending is to change the way the social safety net works, Medicaid and food stamps being the two best known. Dirty diapers aren't often mentioned in the same breath as social safety net. Think about what happens, though, if you need them, but you can't afford them. From Washington, Elizabeth Wynn Johnson has the story, one poopy diaper at a time.
6-week-old Daniel puts away a lot of milk. It's fuel he'll need.
Because I'm going to be tall and have big hands and feet, just like my grandpa, and play basketball.
Until then, what goes in must come out, which means Daniel's mom, Daniela Maria Leggett, changes diapers.
A whole lot. I think he has like 4 dirty diapers a day. We run out of diapers so much.
We're at the Northwest Center, which offers counseling and assistance to low-income families in Washington, D.C. Daniela says she doesn't know how she'd manage without the free diapers she gets here each month. Neither does Natalia Diaz-Manaya. Even buying in bulk, diapers are expensive.
Maybe a box would cost me about $45, and I use maybe 2 to 2.5 boxes per month.
Programs like food stamps and WIC don't cover diapers. Corinne Cannon and her husband stumbled onto this problem a couple of years ago.
We started calling organizations and said, what do you need? Can we give you time? Can we give you money? What do you need? And we heard over and over again, to our complete surprise, we need diapers.
She started DC Diaper Bank, one of only about 40 in the country. But they're about to get a very big boost from a national network for diaper banks and a long-established children's charity, plus a donation of 20 million Huggies diapers. Through this new partnership, diaper bankers will be able to tap into the outreach of many more organizations. For its part, Huggies will get brand recognition and goodwill.
20 million diapers will eventually be used, you know, because we know babies go through diapers fast. But what we will have is the awareness that was raised around this issue. So folks will know that food stamps don't pay for diapers, and they'll think about it longer term.
In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Wynn Johnson for Marketplace.
You know, reading just ain't what it used to be. Not only is there just so much more out there to read, online in particular, but also on your iPad or e-reader. Buying real books with actual pages is becoming a thing of the past. Bookstores are disappearing, too. And now, in perhaps the most futuristic development, authors themselves may be on the way out. From San Diego, Caitlin Carroll reports.
You'd think if someone published 1,050,000 books, you'd know his name.
Hi, my name is Phil Parker. I'm a professor at INSEAD, and I'm involved in automated publishing.
If Philip Parker doesn't ring a bell, don't worry. The business professor publishes books on esoteric topics. How esoteric? Here's the title of one book, The 2007 to 2012 Outlook for Consumer Non-Writing Dual-Stage Snow Throwers and Snow Blowers, Excluding Attachment Type in India.
Okay, just as a little tour here, Sean here is working.
We're at Parker's business, Icon Publishing in San Diego. It's basically two rooms with a bunch of computers and about a dozen computer programmers. Icon specializes in trade reports, language learning materials, and medical guides, all in very niche topics.
There might only be 10 people in the entire world who would care about one particular report or topic, but because our incremental cost of producing a title or report is so low, we might as well serve that segment of the market.
Parker's production costs are only 23 cents per book because they're made by computers. Algorithms search through incredible amounts of data from published research and government reports. That info is then plugged into a book format. It's kind of like a very high-tech form of Mad Libs. Parker came up with the idea in the 90s when he was writing economic reports.
A lot of people in corporate America spend a lot of time writing reports that kind of look like the report last year. Basically, they're doing the same thing over and over again.
He thought a computer could do it just as easily. Now Parker sells his trade reports for between $400 and $700. But he's also created works of fiction, even poetry. But the problem is books made by computers aren't always so people-friendly. A review on Amazon says one of Parker's medical guides had a jumpy and pasted-together feeling, and that most of the information seemed really generic.
The problem with this random aggregation that he's doing is that it doesn't narrow down the field of the data that he's getting by saying we're going to pick out this kind of source in this kind of way so we can provide some kind of stamp of authenticity.
Jeffrey Bacher is a professor of computer sciences at the University of California, Irvine. Bacher thinks university libraries could be wasting their money on these books.
Many libraries automatically pick up books with certain subject headings, even if there's no potential readership.
Anita Colby coordinates the science libraries at University of California, Los Angeles. She says the library's budget has been cut way back, and they're very selective about which books they buy. Colby checks out a library database to see some of Philip Parker's titles.
Oh, the market for suitcases in Croatia. Now, why do you think that's niche? This is kind of fascinating. It's very interesting.
Colby says that the UC system does have some of Parker's books, and most have been checked out at least once or twice, so that's a good sign. But universities are all about personal research and credibility.
It seems counter to the academy, because the guy clearly has no real area of expertise.
Even if the content isn't perfect, a lot of people are interested in the possibilities. Nonprofits like the Grameen Foundation want to use Parker's methods to translate farming and health advice in places like Africa. Parker says automated publishing could even be used to create prep for radio shows.
everything that's financial is very, very formulaic. It's like you can't get more formulaic than financial reporting.
Yeah, except for Marketplace, of course. Our stories are still written by people, not computers.
In San Diego, I'm Caitlin Carroll from Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note on the way out today, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke went back to the classroom this afternoon. The one-time Princeton economist is giving four lectures at George Washington University this semester. Today was the first. Today's lesson was the gold standard. Here's part of what he said.
There's a story told that a British official, Treasury official, was taking a bath. An aide came running in saying, "We're off the gold standard, we're off the gold standard." And he said, "I didn't know we could do that." But they could, and they had to. They had no choice because there was a speculative attack on the pound.
Yeah, the real lesson there, that even from Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Fed, economics is still boring. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 68 points. That's about 0.5%. The NASDAQ dropped 4 points, 0.1%. The S&P 500 fell 4 points, 0.3%. Thanks to Ethan Lindsay and Jolie Podokas on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us back here tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.